This week on The Deep Dive, we focus on Tender Loving Care, a psychological FMV game from 1998. It was developed by Aftermath Media, directed and written by David Wheeler, and produced by Rob Landeros. And it was actually based on the 1984 novel by the same name, which was written by Andrew Niederman. As always, it is recommended that you play the game before listening, as we're going to dive deep, and in the abyss, there be spoilers. Without further ado, let's descend.
Beautiful house, isn't it? I love this part of the valley. But as the saying goes, looks can indeed be deceiving. This place is for sale now. Nobody's buying. Not after what happened here. It's troubling because no one really knows just what did happen. I should know. Oh, I'm Dr. Turner, by the way. I'm a psychiatrist. I was close to all the players in this event. But it's as much a mystery to me as it is to anyone else. Perhaps you can help. A fresh eye and an uncluttered view. And maybe, together, we can reassemble the happenings. And get a better understanding of what took place. We can only hope.
Hi, Kat.
Hi.
So we're going to be talking about Tender Loving Care. I feel like you should lead this discussion since you played the game.
I will do my best. I honestly hadn't even considered talking about this game for a deep dive, at least not right away. So when you were like really excited to talk about it, I was really excited to talk about it because these type of games are like my jam, like 100%. So to be able to share them in a different way beyond the stream is like super exciting.
So the FMV old school games or just old
yes.
school games in general?
Well, old school games in general, but I really love the FMV games because it kind of combines like the two things that I love the most, which are like, you know, movies and like old school video games, you know, so it's a good time.
So I didn't know that they really did FMV old school video games until I started watching you stream them.
Really?
And you played, yeah. I mean, I think I knew that there existed a weird Titanic FMV game. Have you played that yet?
I haven't played it yet, no. I watched Tom play it, but I haven't played it yet.
Okay, so I watched somebody play that and I thought that was really amazing. I watched Chris actually play that and he's going to be a feature guest on the show. Yay! And then you played one shortly after that and I remember thinking to myself, what? I didn't even know these were a big thing. You know, I knew computer games were out there, but I didn't know FMV games were out there. So I can't remember which one you played, but it was really dark and brutal.
It was, Phantasmagoria. And then I played the second one right after that. Yeah, that was the one that you watched with Michael, the telephone repairman.
Yeah, exactly. And then this also had a Michael in it. Yeah, so let's talk about Tender Loving Care. I don't know what to expect in games like this, and I think that's part of its charm, is that when you start it up, you're just kind of like, wait, what's happening here? Is this going to be really badly acted and just absurd? You know, you kind of feel like it might be like that in the beginning, but especially with the way Catherine kind of appears, she's just kind of, you know, I know your chat and we were kind of freaking out about how absurdly she presents herself. But I actually think in retrospect, when I was thinking about it later, I think that if they didn't do it on purpose, I could argue that they did it on purpose because I think that's how Michael sees her. When she first arrives, he sees her as this, you know, overly sexual, you know, nurse fantasy that he likes.
Yeah.
And so maybe she is, you know, shown that way and being overly ridiculous in kind of hitting on him sort of, because that's what his fantasy, that's what he's imagining.
Yeah.
So I wonder sometimes if like the game you know, because you're just an observer, but I wonder sometimes how they wanted you to be an observer, if you were supposed to be seeing it through Michael's point of view, or, you know, like his, I don't want to say his mental illness, but when he breaks himself, I feel like everything made sense all of a sudden. I was like, oh, this is why everything's been weird this whole time. Because he's just been borderline ready to jump off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the way the game sort of sets itself up, you know, you're focusing on Michael's wife, Allison, entirely, who, just sort of give everybody a little bit of a premise here.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So the game opens up with Michael and Allison, married couple, in bed, and they're talking about, it's just an innocent conversation about breakfast. You know, did you bring Jody her breakfast? And Jody is their child, who unfortunately passed away in a very violent car accident. However, the setup is that Allison refuses to acknowledge Jody's death and acts as if she is still alive in just normal, everyday activities.
Breakfast time.
Did you get Jody's breakfast?
Oatmeal and raisins, like always.
She loves her oatmeal.
Yeah, she certainly does. I see you're starting a new project. What's it going to be this time?
It's a sweater for Jody.
Thought so. It's her favorite color.
Yes, it is.
And Michael is sort of, I don't want to say encouraging this, but it's like it's hard to say, like, if he doesn't really know what to do about it, or if he just chooses not to act on it, or whatever the case may be. He doesn't do anything to prevent it beyond hiring the nurse.
Allison, do you remember the nurse we discussed?
The nurse for Jody?
Yeah.
Michael, I told you I can take care of Jody myself.
I know, but Dr. Turner thinks it would be best if we just...
Michael, please.
He thinks it would be best for Jody. And that's what we both want, isn't it? What's best for Jody? Allison? Isn't it?
Yes.
Good.
So that's kind of where the game starts you off right away. And then we're introduced to Catherine pretty much immediately, who is the character of the nurse. And then it just kind of spirals from there. But yeah, which, from what you were saying earlier, the question is really interesting as far as whether or not, I guess, it's just as bad for Michael to sort of placate Allison as it is for Allison to be in the situation that he's in. Like, they're sort of polar opposites of the same sort of illness, I guess, or condition, or just inappropriate way of dealing with this terrible thing that happened, if that makes sense.
Well, I think he might feel like he has to, because I think at some point you find a file or something like that about Allison and about how she had had previous treatment. And when either a nurse or somebody tried to tell her that her daughter was dead, she freaked out.
She reacted very violently, yes.
Yeah, she reacted extremely violently. So I think he probably kind of just feels like, what do I do at this point? I have to just kind of acknowledge. But it's interesting that he recognizes that he needs help in aiding her. You know, he has a doctor, and then he also asks his doctor, I need professional assistance to help my wife because, you know, she won't even get out of bed. She won't do any of this stuff. And she still thinks her daughter is alive. And when she says, you know, did you bring her breakfast? It's not clear if, you know, my wife actually means I want breakfast, you know, at least in watching it. I thought that a couple of times. I thought,
yeah, so did I.
Allison's way of saying, I don't want to do something or I'm uncomfortable, was to use Jody and say, Jody doesn't want this or Jody doesn't like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting as well.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
You don't know that Jody is dead for the first, I'd say, 2 hours of the game, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's hard to land on any other conclusion, but yeah, I mean, you're right.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, we both assumed, we assumed that's what had happened, but they don't confirm it until, like, quite a bit into the game, so I thought that was interesting as well.
True. I was also just, taking forever in playing the game, so that may have had something to do with it. The game is actually supposed to only take, I think, like, 3 to 4 hours to complete, maybe 5 hours max, and it took me, like, 10.
Yeah, but you stopped and discussed every choice and every question, and I personally enjoyed that a lot as somebody who was watching it. I thought it was great.
Oh, I was totally surprised by the depth of the game and the questions that it asks you in general. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, so it had this really neat, for those of you listening, it had this really cool kind of psychoanalysis going on throughout the entire game, where it would show you either paintings or pictures, and then it would ask you questions about that, which was super fascinating. And it's the only thing that I wish that I felt was lacking from the end of the game. Like, the whole game was fantastic, but I wish that they had done something with that psychoanalysis. I was really hoping the credits would roll and then they would tell you a little bit about yourself in some creepy way, but they didn't. They just let it sit. But you know what? I'm now wondering if that's perfect, because you're uncomfortable when they ask you those questions and you're thinking, oh God, why are they asking me this question? And then they don't do anything with it. Oh.
Yeah, I think because the game does have multiple endings, and apparently
Oh, yeah.
your answers to those questions will influence the ending that you get. And I actually haven't seen the other endings yet. I actually thought it might be kind of fun, and I might just chop this part out if we don't do it.
Yeah.
If we watch them live together.
Yes, let's do it.
And
Okay.
just like reacted to them, maybe not like right now, but like once we get kind of
Yeah.
towards that point, I think that'd be
Holy
fun.
sh.
But yeah,
That
so
would be very cool.
the game, what is the term that they use for those tests? It's a thematic apperception test. A TAT is what the game calls it, where it shows you the image and you're supposed to sort of try to figure out what the image is conveying, or at least differentiate what that image is conveying to you, in a list of set options. So like it'll show you a picture of a dog, and one of the questions will be like, if I was a flea, I would be a miserable, depressed flea. And then you
I
just go
saw
true, false,
that,
or no
yeah.
opinion, So it does stuff like that. And in addition to that, the game would also bring on Dr. Turner, played by John Hurt, which is amazing. And
Yeah.
he would ask you questions directly about yourself, because throughout the game, you are only referred to, you're kind of a character, but you're referred to as the voyeur. You don't have a
Yeah,
name or
which
anything like
is
that.
kind of
And
cool.
yeah, and you're just like, you're directly spoken to. And so
I thought your
Dr.
answer
Turner will
was
come
great, by the
on.
way.
Which one?
You were like, sorry, when they asked you if you would be a happy or a depressed tick, you were like, well, it's not that hard. You just find some thick fur and bury yourself in it.
Pretty much. Which also happens a couple of times in the game, but we'll get to that. It is a very
18
raunchy
plus.
game. Yes,
I don't
100%.
know if I would say 18 plus, but
It's
17 or
definitely
whatever.
18. Well, the age ratings are weird to me. It's
Yeah.
appropriate to, it depends on the person, whatever. But yes,
Yeah.
it's a
Okay.
very not safe for
There's
work
nudity.
title. There is lots of
Lots. Yeah.
nudity.
Not
Yes.
safe for work. That's a good way to put
Yes.
it. Okay. Anyway, sorry. I interrupted you about Dr.
No, you're
Turner.
fine. So he will ask you questions about yourself personally. Like, do you feel that Catherine is somebody, like how do you feel about Catherine? And it'll ask you
Is she
if is
trustworthy?
she
Yeah, they
trustworthy?
asked
Yeah,
that.
or and then
Yeah.
it'll start to ask you things like, do you like to watch other people have sex? And it's just like the most like strange set of questions to sort of influence what happens in your experience of the game, which is it totally surprised me. Like, we went through the beginning of the game, the first FMV sequence, and then those questions pop up, and I was just like, oh my God, like what is this? Like, I've
Yeah.
never seen a game do something like this before, at least not so directly. And it's the most interesting mechanic I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. Also, just because they did a good job of someone's in need, somebody's in help, Allison really needs help, but also you got the feeling that Catherine was very much there for both of them. Like, there was throughout the whole game, there's this hint that Michael is also not well, and he's not dealing with it well, and maybe he wants Allison to stay sick because it makes him feel better about himself, and all of that. And then it throws questions at you at the same time. So it's just kind of like you're trying to figure out who really is trustworthy. Are you even trustworthy? It just like makes you kind of doubt yourself and your beliefs and stuff, which I thought was very interesting. And you don't see many games do that
No.
at all. I don't think I've ever encountered a game quite like this one.
No, I mean you're absolutely right. It definitely, I definitely found myself, a couple of times making a decision or making an assessment or a judgment about somebody and saying, this is the way it is, this is how I feel, and then all of a sudden, you know, I either talk myself out of it, or the mm-hmm. game does something else that just totally flips it around for me, and I'm like, well, hang on now, you know. It does a very good job of just consistently making you question yourself.
So what I want all my games to do. Except I wasn't expecting it out of this one, because this one was like right. this weird, raunchy, like, 90s
yeah.
semi-porn. Yeah, it was weird. Oh,
I definitely
God.
Expected it to just be, you know, very basic. Like, we're just going to sit here, we're going to laugh at this for a couple hours, and that'll be the end of it. But it ended up being quite a ride.
I'm sorry, that scene where she just, like, shoves herself against the window.
It was the silliest thing. Oh, my goodness.
Like, that is not attractive. I mean, God, I just started laughing. I just couldn't help myself. Like, oh, I don't know. She just looked like a crazy person.
Yeah,
shoving herself up against the window and then licking the window like, like, that's not hot, lady. I don't know. I don't know what just happened.
Oh, man. Yeah, she anyway. Does that right at the... She doesn't do quite that, but, like, right at the beginning of the game, the first night that Catherine is who we're talking about, the nurse that is hired to brought in... As far as Allison is concerned, the nurse is brought in to take care of Jody, who is mm-hmm. the child who is not actually alive.
Right.
But the nurse is actually... That she's brought in to help Allison sort of recover from this illness that she has, this... sort of mental break to where she can't actually comprehend that her daughter has passed away. But immediately there is this vibe about her that is just, it's just off, you know, it's not off. That's not really the right word, but she's very flirtatious, I guess. She's very suggestive in her.
There's no, I guess. She starts unbuttoning her top right in front of Michael. She's just like, I need to get changed, and here's two or three buttons, and then I'm going to slowly back you out of the room and make eyes at you the whole time.
Right. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. There are portions of the game where you learn more about this character, and you find that she has a past of studying sexual behavior, and her throughout the game you have these journal entries and her
which were amazing to listen yes. to you read.
I don't know about all that.
some of them were very graphic, and yes. Myself and Captain Howdy's entire chat was really enjoying how uncomfortable it made him to read some of these journal entries.
A little bit. It was a little bit nerve-wracking to stream this game, to be honest with you, because you know, if somebody's not familiar, Twitch has a policy that states that you are not allowed to provide content that makes sexual content a focus, is basically the way that it's worded in Twitch's like terms of service, right? But if a game has redeeming value beyond its sexual content, then it's generally allowed to be broadcast as long as you flag your channel as 18+, which I do. But even so, I don't think I have ever seen or played a game as graphic as this one, just in terms of so that definitely made me a little bit nervous. And even something like those journal entries, like, it's like I could never get away from it, you know. There was never really a moment in the game that wasn't just like wrapped up in sexuality in some fashion, which is an important part of the game, because as we're talking about Catherine, you basically get the sense that she has her problem is her sexual addiction, and that mm-hmm. never stops. And that is sort of what gets everybody into trouble right away. Not that I really want to place blame on her directly, because obviously Michael made some really bad decisions.
Well, but there's a saying that I quite like that's like, don't open the door. She mm-hmm. opened the door. When she first met him, she opened the door, and yeah, he walked through it, but had she not invited it, that... nothing would have happened. She clearly was like, let's get it on.
Did
come
she
get
though?
Naked with me.
Let's think about their very first interaction, right? So she pulls
where
up in the
she's
cab.
She's like, okay, she's... replay this for me.
This man says it's a $50 fare from the airport.
Lady, it's 25 miles. $2 a mile.
Mrs. Randolph?
Yes. Am I being overcharged?
I'll take care of it.
See, some piece of work.
I wouldn't tip him. He doesn't deserve it.
Thanks for your trouble.
Thanks, ma'am. Good luck.
You know, she's arguing with the cab driver because she said the cab driver overcharged her or whatever.
Right.
But then immediately Michael is like, oh, you weren't what I expected. You don't look like a Mrs. Randolph.
Oh, yeah, that's
you
true.
Know?
And then she's all annoyed that he wanted an old woman or he was expecting an old woman. And she's like, do you not think I can do my job? And yeah, that's true. But I guess my first encounter with her that I really is still day one. He shows her to the room and she starts undressing right in front of him in a very like, you know, I don't know.
It's I hear you.
It made me
for
uncomfortable.
Sure.
It made me uncomfortable. I was like, what's happening here? And maybe, you know, I do think it's interesting that one journal entry that you find where it talks about how she wants to explore therapy through sexuality. I thought that was very interesting because it made sense then why she was just kind of like, let's all meditate naked kind of thing. but see, she wasn't just doing it to Michael either. She was very sexual with Allison as well. And that's just kind of like how she approached the therapy was like, oh, I'm going to do the standard traditional methods. And then I'm also going to, you know, have sex with both of these people and that'll make them feel better because sex makes everybody feel great.
Well, I mean, that is the thing.
All right, Catherine.
Well, no, it's just the only thing that I was going to make note of here is, you know, first of all, one of the things that Catherine does with Allison is supposedly meditation, right? So they go into her room and they shut the door and they're naked. Mm-hmm. Although we don't actually ever see Catherine and Allison's meditation. So we don't actually know if they're doing anything like totally inappropriate. I mean, they probably are. I mean, let's be real. Because I don't even think it was confirmed in the audio recordings or the journal entries. However, I found that kind of interesting.
I actually don't think it was confirmed. Yeah, I don't think it was confirmed. And you can take it, it's up to interpretation. You can take it two ways. You can take it as Michael's paranoia and him just like looking at that and his fantasy and wanting to kind of like see.
He very
and I
much
wonder
wanted
if
that
changes.
To be a thing, yeah.
I wonder if that changes based on what you choose. Is it just the ending that's different or are there other things in the game that are different?
That I'm honestly not sure of.
Huh. I'd be interested to check that out because you don't find out for sure and you could take it as his fantasy and what he desires, but I feel like Allison's pretty expressive in the way she is towards Catherine and with her body language and even just the way she speaks after their first meditation that I think something probably did happen. And also when Michael finally does go to meditate, it's not meditation at all. It's sex.
You're early. That's good. Come in. Hey, you look like you've had a bad day. Come sit down on the bed. Let's get you relaxed. It won't hurt, I promise. Relax, you feel like a mannequin.
It's not so easy.
What are you afraid of?
I don't know. You, I guess.
You don't have to be afraid of me. I'm just here to make you feel better.
It does feel good.
It's supposed to. Why don't you take your shirt off? On my back.
So.
Yes.
I'm gonna assume that it was also sex with Allison.
I think it's a safe assumption. I found it interesting that the game doesn't directly tell you. And so you're sort of just supposed to make a judgment on that and continue your game based on whether or not that's happening. Because that is sort of influential. I would, at least I would imagine it would be, as far as the decisions that you make, because as the game progresses, you're asked more and more questions about whether or not you think Catherine's actions are justified. And the way that she's going about her treatment is proper and is something that's okay. So you had definitely have to consider whether or not she's actually having sex with Allison when you make those judgment calls. But regardless of whether or not, like, she does some pretty gross things. Just, like, totally off the wall, just, like, disgusting. Like, really uncomfortable.
There's a specific thing. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about, but where she pretends to be Jody.
Yeah.
In the bedroom.
It's like one of two things. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's pretending to be the dead daughter, which you find out also throughout the game that she wasn't wearing her seatbelt. So I think it's, you know, you sort of kind of figure it out on your own, I think, that Michael didn't. It was kind of his fault, if anyone could be at fault. He sees it as his fault because he didn't buckle her up or in to the car. Totally
either
random
one.
But buckle in, buckle up, I don't know. Anyway, he didn't buckle her up, so he kind of sees it as his fault, which is extra fucked up, because he can't really deal with that very well already on his own. And so he passes the bedroom and she's in the bed, and then they kind of have this weird dialogue.
Daddy, I'm scared.
Do this.
Daddy.
Please.
Don't leave me.
Stop it.
Don't send me away, Daddy.
I won't.
Promise me you'll never send me away. Say it, Daddy.
I promise I'll never send you away.
Where she's like, is there anything that you want to tell me? Which is actually something that they do in therapy. So the technique is like, I get it. But then as soon as he says the thing, like, I'll never leave you or something like that, she just like pulls the covers off. She's 100% naked and then like walks up to him and sort of like touches him and kisses him. And it's like, dude, no, you're pretending to be his dead daughter. What's wrong with you? Oh, yeah. God, no, that was gross. That was probably the grossest thing in the game.
Yeah, it was totally, totally off the wall and just like,
yeah, dead dog,
really
whatever. But like, man, that was so gross.
There's a lot, lot to take in what seems like a really short amount of time and a lot to process. That being one of the most just like in your face moments where you really have to question whether or not Catherine is going too far.
Yeah, no, that's too far. That's too far.
At one point, Catherine decides that it would be good to get a dog. And the purpose for getting this dog, she justifies as giving Allison something that is alive to love and to take care of and to be able to sort of relearn what it is to be sort of nurturing and motherly to this actual living thing, as opposed to her daughter who's actually dead and, you know, doesn't exist anymore, basically.
Which they do. Again, that is an actual technique. And that's, you know, it can be very therapeutic and very helpful sometimes. However, and I think I said this while you were playing the game, if they're not like at a mental state and something happens to the dog before, you know, that person is ready, like the dog dies suddenly, it's that trauma all over again of the loss of the, you know, her child. She'd go through it all, you know, all over again. And that's a nightmare.
I think that was Catherine's goal, though. And that's why I think that Catherine is the one that killed the dog, is because I think that Catherine wanted to show her just the act of death of something that she loves again. and sort of, in a way, kickstart that thought process to also apply to Jody as well, because she sees it happen right in front of her face. You know what I mean?
I just don't think that would... I'm not saying that's the right way to do that. And also, you know, you get somebody a dog and then 2 weeks later you kill the dog. That's right. That's no. I understand that showing somebody that they can love something again and take care of something, you know, getting her dog is good because it gets her out of bed. Who's going to walk the dog? The dog needs you, you know, like it gives her a reason to be doing the things that eventually add up to a huge puzzle of feeling good again. You know, each, you need a whole bunch of pieces. Exercise, sometimes for some people it's medication as well as exercise and, you know, proper eating and proper sleep, and all these things add up to finally being able to function again after such a traumatic loss. And to kill it right away, no, I don't think so.
For sure. So no. I'm curious, what were your moments where you were not considering it to be Catherine that killed the dog? Can you elaborate on that at all?
When she said initially, you put my shoes in the sand down there because you need me to have killed the dog, I was like, that is a legit thing. Because he is spiraling down into a breakdown. He never liked the dog. He doesn't like Catherine. He sees his wife getting better. He can't have his wife get better because when she gets better, she's going to blame him for the death of his daughter. And I just, like, in that moment, I went, oh God, this could be a thing. And then also, you know, not to spoil anything before we're ready to spoil a thing, but he you know, commits that act at the end. And I was like, oh shit, is this where we find out that he was the one that also killed the dog? And then we find out as he's like, you know, he's talking to the dog at that point. I don't know.
it's valid for sure. I don't know. I think that I got to a point where I just assumed that everything that Catherine did was just like vile and disgusting and she could never actually do anything right. So I never really landed on it being Michael. You also mentioned it might have been Allison.
In that last scene where they're on the couch and they're having that conversation, she says she never really liked Catherine.
So Catherine's finally gone?
Has she?
I put her in a taxi.
I guess you were right all along. We never really needed her.
No. And despite whatever she did or said, Jody never really liked her.
I know. I had a little talk with Jody about that. I thought she'd be upset about Catherine leaving. But she wasn't. As a matter of fact, she said the nurse often frightened her.
I don't doubt it.
Allison says, I know, she never really liked her. In fact, sometimes kind of scared her. In that moment, I was like, she's had a violent history before. And I don't know. It could have been Allison, like, is spiraling further and further down into the depths. We just don't know. And I just remember thinking, like, oh my God, it could have been any one of these guys. They're all crazy. They're all crazy.
I don't know, man.
But it wasn't like any one thing in particular where I went, ooh, that's evidence.
Fair enough.
It was definitely either Michael or Catherine in my mind, but I didn't think that it was really Catherine until kind of it was like he kept saying, you know, oh, she killed the dog and she's trying to blame it on me. And then, oh, that was one thing where I kind of sort of maybe thought it was Allison, because when he confronts her, Allison believes Catherine over Michael, right? About the dog.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I was like, oh, man, what if it was Allison? And now she's just kind of like, oh. Yep, I'm gonna let this blame fall on Michael because I can't handle it. You know? I don't know. I'm paranoid. I don't trust anyone.
No, it's totally valid. I think for me, what makes me curious about that is I wonder if Allison latched on to Catherine in that moment just because Catherine was the one that was there. Because Michael wasn't even at the house when the dog was found.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily know when the dog died, but we know when the dog was found. And that was when he was like out at the store or something. Or was that when he was at Dr. Turner's office? But either way, he was gone. Or maybe that was when he went back to work. Either way, he was out of the house and he comes back and just finds them both like sitting in the backyard crying. Or Allison is crying and Catherine is like comforting her. And that's when we find out that the dog had died. So I don't know if you know, Michael had been there to comfort her right away, maybe that would have played out a little bit differently. It's kind of interesting to think about.
I wonder what changes in the game based on what you answer. That is very interesting, because they ask you questions like, are you paranoid? Like, do you trust easily, like, type thing. They ask you all sorts of stuff. And of course, now I'm paranoid and now I'm wondering, like, what what does that change in the game? I really enjoyed the unraveling of Michael. Mm-hmm. I hated him in the beginning. Hate's a strong word. I just liked him, and I thought that he was really messed up. I also thought that he was purposefully hindering Allison's progression into healing because he didn't want to deal with his own stuff.
Right.
So that was kind of annoying at first, but just kind of watching him deal with sexual frustration, you know, with his wife, or just in general, that's like all he seemed to think about. But just kind of watching that twist into, because if you think about it, Catherine could have been doing everything right. And if she didn't kill the dog, aside from the fact that she slept with Michael, she could have still been really trying to help Allison, and we just watch Michael slowly devolve into this, like, paranoid, you know, oh, she seduced me, oh, she killed my dog, when really it's him projecting, like, oh, I came onto her and I had willingly had sex with her, like, she invited me in and I came in and, you know, I did this and I feel horribly guilty, I killed my daughter, I'm unfaithful to my wife, and then instead of dealing with all of that, he just projects it all on Catherine and is like, you know, you seduced me, you killed my dog, you did all this terrible stuff, and now I'm gonna murder you, you know, type thing. And I just it could be, you know, aside from the fact that I think Catherine, like, openly admits some things, I think I would have appreciated it actually if she hadn't, and that way you could go back and because if you go back and you look at it, you could look at it either way, as if Michael is true or if he has completely lost his mind and he's just crazy.
I mean, I think that,
or broken.
I mean, he's clearly broken either way.
I don't know. I think he's just damaged in the beginning. I do think the way that the game is set up now, I think she breaks him. I shouldn't say she breaks him, but just all of the events in the game bring him to that breaking point.
Well, yeah, of course.
I don't think he would have stayed as broken had all of those things not occurred. So
I think he needed some version of that anyway. You know, like, I truly feel like if Catherine hadn't shown up and done what she did, and there's of course better ways to go about literally everything that happened in this game.
Yeah.
However,
yeah,
how long could he have lasted in this loop of encouraging Allison to never get over the and process the death of Jody? Like, how long could that have actually continued before something else had caused him to just lose his mind?
Well, I think in the beginning of the game, it's really weird because he's got that, what is that called? It's called something when you want somebody to stay sick. He has that in the beginning where everybody sympathizes with him, and, you know, they bring him casserole dishes and stuff, and everybody at work is, you know, I'm so sorry. And, you know, he gets this attention, and then also he feels like a hero for, you know, helping his extremely damaged wife. And he doesn't have to face the fact that he feels like he killed his kid. You know, he doesn't have to face any of that because he's too busy being a parent to his wife now. He definitely, I felt like he wanted her to stay sick because it made him a hero. And I suspected from the very beginning that Jody was dead, and that a little ways in, I was like, okay, I feel like as soon as they mentioned seatbelts, I was like, okay, he didn't do it. And that's, you know, he feels terribly guilty, and now everything makes sense as to why he's being so resistant to Catherine coming and trying to cure his wife. Because at first he's totally fine with it until she starts showing progress, like she's getting better.
True.
Then he gets upset. So I don't know. Michael, the character Michael, so crazy.
Like, on the surface, he's very basic, right? Like, he just seems like he's mad because he can't have sex with his wife anymore, and, like, that's all he gives a shit about.
Or the nurse that he likes.
You know, there are a couple of moments where he's sort of forced to remember that his daughter is dead when he's like sent into her room to go get like her homework or something like that, or to set up the TV that Catherine said that she needed, stuff like that. And he does, so you do sort of see like him break a little bit, you know what I mean? So then when that happens, it's kind of hard to just immediately think that he's a piece of shit when you know that he is kind of going through his own thing. It's just not really expressed as much, as it's not the focus of the narrative like Allison's is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the focus is more how he falls apart as opposed to what's wrong with him in the first place.
Yeah. I feel like in those moments, I was able to be empathetic to his pain and to what has happened, but he's still a total dickbag. Like, everything else he does in the game, he's rude to people. Like, I understand he's in pain, but that doesn't excuse his behavior. Mm-hmm. He's rude to everybody, his coworkers, like, what the hell, dude? And then also just, he's rude to his wife, just everything. He's just awful. And, you know, being rude is one thing, but, you know, he sleeps with the nurse. I don't know. Even his journal entries about talking about that. No, you know what? The more I think about this, the more upset I get, because that one journal entry about how when they were first dating, you know, they had lots of sex. And then she was like, I'm worried that you're only with me to have sex, so let's not have sex for a while. And then he has sex with her friend, and she set him up to do it because she felt like, I can't remember what she said. It was really fucked up what she said, but still, it's just bad news. He's just bad news. Like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. But also it's frustrating that we can't bang. Like, what? God. Ugh. And he didn't even say it that way. It wasn't polite like that. It was.
No.
Ugh. Anyway, I don't know. I don't like him. I don't like him. I don't like him at all. I was sad to see him completely break down, though. I was hoping that things would go a little bit differently. So for those listening who maybe didn't watch the game or didn't play or watch the game, you really should, because it's crazy. But Michael does end up, at least in the playthrough that we experienced, he does end up killing Catherine on the stairs with a sledgehammer. He like kills her and then buries her outside in his backyard. With the dog, right? In the same thing or right next to the dog?
In the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. So, I don't know. So that's the moment where I thought maybe he had killed the dog, because he's talking to the dog in that scene like, oh, I guess we better do something about this. And he knew exactly where to go. And yeah, there's a mound, but I don't know. It just felt weird. Anyway, it's so good because he drags her body out there, and the whole time, and I know it's just like a 90s game, so maybe at the time they weren't thinking this like this, but it was really weird for me to see how delicately and tenderly approached Catherine through that entire game until that moment when he's just dragging her body through the lawn.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, and they show it and she's just like limp there and he's just dragging her across and like her skirt's coming up and he just doesn't care. And it's so weird. It's so awkward. Yeah. Anyway. So then, and then after that, after he buries her, he goes inside and has a conversation with Allison. And that's the one we were referencing earlier where he says, I don't think Jody liked Catherine very much. And Allison's like, no, she didn't. And in that moment, I thought, oh God, Allison knows that he's killed. I mean, how could she not? She was listening to the whole thing. She heard their argument. She heard him potentially hit her with the hammer and drag her body through. So she knows, and she's choosing to continue on with this delusion that, you know, Jody and, you know, no big deal. So in that moment, you're like, wow, she's unsavable. She is. That's it. There's no going back for her. And also, is he pretending so that she'll believe it, or is he did he just feed into her delusion?
I'm uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, or is he also delusional?
Let's talk about the end of the game a little bit. So
yeah,
basically the catalyst for the big events at the end of the game, or at least the end of my playthrough, is Catherine decides to get this life-size doll that represents Jody. Over time, Michael is more and more aggressive about just asking Catherine to leave and removing her from the home because he doesn't agree with what she's doing, and he keeps succumbing to the temptation of just sleeping with her and cheating on his wife, which he is clearly uncomfortable with. Obviously not to the point of actually stopping doing it.
Yeah.
But he does have some remorse about it. You know that. You can see that.
He gets really upset.
Right. So there is a point in the game where Michael goes to Dr. Turner's office and he makes contact with the agency that Catherine was hired from and tells them what is going on and tells them that she killed the dog, that he thinks that she killed the dog. And so at that point, they call her back. They say, you know, they pull her out of this assignment. So she has to leave, right? So during the sort of the last day of the game, Michael and Catherine are having this conversation, he's very smug about it. And, you know, he's like, oh, you know, you finally have to go. And he's just like laying in her bed, like leaning up against the wall, like smiling about it, right?
Still in uniform, I see.
I'm leaving it on for my final session with Allison.
No more sessions. I want you to leave this house like you're supposed to.
Oh, I'm leaving. But not until my job's done.
Oh, it's done. It's over. It's bye-bye time.
I'm not leaving Allison in this half-catatonic, childlike state. I'm not going to leave her with a madman and just forget about her. It's time for her to face the truth.
You stay away from her.
I had planned on doing it my way, slowly and carefully. But you ruined that. Somehow I knew you would. Now you force me to do it shockingly and abruptly.
What are you talking about? What?
Jody's room. Go on.
And then she's like, and then she just has this moment where she says, well, I didn't want to have to do things this way. You know, I wanted to do things on my own timeline, but you've left me no choice. So, and she tells him, Michael is just, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And she says, go to Jody's room. So Michael walks into Jody's room and you see this life-size doll with a gash in her head and with red paint painted on to basically look like what happened in the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So what Catherine is planning on doing and what she starts to do, because she has to leave, is she takes this doll and she starts walking down the stairs and she's just like screaming like, Allison, look at your daughter, look at what happened to her. You know, she's basically trying to
look at what Michael did.
Exactly. She's gonna shove this doll in her face.
Now it's time for me to do what I was sent here to do. Allison?
Don't. It's too much for her.
You should have thought about that before you interfered with my work. Allison!
No!
Are you calling me, Catherine? I have something I want to show you. Do you want me to come up? Right there, I'll be right down.
I won't let you do this.
Then you do it. You show her what you did.
No, please!
You're so afraid of the truth. Allison, it's time to face the truth.
Leave her alone.
This is what really happened that night in the car. You've been living with a lie too long, and Michael has...
Why'd you do this?
You know, and just make her deal with it right there. And so Michael comes up behind her with the sledgehammer and bashes her in the back of the head, and she falls down the stairs and is dead. What I cannot make a decision on, though... And, well, I don't know. I ultimately don't think it was. Do you think that was premeditated at all?
Oh, dear. Why was the hammer there?
The hammer was there because that's what Catherine used to create the wound in the doll.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Okay. Ooh, I don't know. I don't think so. Why do you think it's premeditated?
Well, I don't necessarily think that it is, but I think that it's a possibility. Everything is laid out so perfectly, right? Like, you have the hammer and you have the red paint in the basement next to the
dog.
Rat poison. You know what I mean? That killed the dog, right? So it's like, do you think Michael was smart enough to set her up?
to already kill a dog so that you can be like, oh, well, there's a, it's this mound back. There's the dead dog. She killed the dog, so I got her fired. Maybe he really killed the dog and then killed her. Oh, my God. That's so good. I don't even care if that's, like, you know, canon or what, but that's interesting to me. That's an interesting thought. And I do think that he could be potentially have done that, sure. Killed the dog and then blamed it on her. And then she was like, what are you? Because her reaction when he accuses her is really weird. She's just like, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of everything else she has openly admitted to doing. That's the only thing where she was like, no.
She doesn't really seem to give a shit about telling Michael what she's doing.
No.
Because she doesn't ever expect Michael to do anything. She's sort of provoking him by doing that in her own way. He doesn't really ever ask. That's actually really interesting because he doesn't ever ask Catherine if her and Allison are having sex. He only asks Allison, and Allison won't tell him. And he doesn't even really directly ask. He's just like, well, what exactly do you do when you two meditate and stuff like that? You know?
Yeah.
So you don't ever have that opportunity to know if Catherine would hide something else from Michael.
Yeah. Except that he hid the doll. Because he doesn't know about the doll either until one of the coworkers is like, are you adopting a new kid? Because I saw a child in a wheelchair.
Do you think that she was hiding that from him? Or maybe she just didn't care to... Because, I mean, she's not going to sit there and tell him what her plan is.
Well, she should, shouldn't she? Well, she's the nurse, but you're the alive spouse, of course. If something had happened to my partner, I would... hope that the nurse would include me on the plant, like the plan.
Not Catherine, though. You're right, but not Catherine.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I
Catherine
guess
doesn't give it. Catherine does everything, anything that she wants. She doesn't ask for anybody's approval. She doesn't give a shit.
Oh man, that's so weird. And that happens a couple of times where he is upset at her process and not knowing things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they have an argument about it. He goes to her boss and she gets really upset. See, I don't know. Maybe it is premeditated.
Obviously, he probably didn't know that he was going to... He maybe not have necessarily known that he was going to walk up behind her and bash her with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think he said, I will do whatever it takes to get her out of here.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he 100% would have killed her in another way at some other point had she not left. Had that event not happened, he still would have done it. He also didn't have a reaction of like, oh no, what have I done, or anything like that. He was just like, boom, done, time to go, and then like walked her out to the already prepared grave. Oh my God. So good.
He did dig that hole awfully deep to bury a dog.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
I do think that he probably had it in his head. You would, of course, when you're watching this, you can tell that he thinks he won when she's like packing up her stuff and getting ready to go.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's unreasonable to consider that he had at one point said to himself, if I need to do more, then I will, you know?
Yeah.
But okay.
Now,
so
is that to protect Allison or is that to protect his own delusion?
That's the question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I think the as time went on, you realize he is just as broken as Allison. They're just,
they're broken
they're
in different ways.
Different ways. You know,
yep.
Yeah, they're both very broken over the death of their daughter. What I find really chilling and amazing is I thought that the game was actually going to end at that last scene where they have that conversation and he says, oh, you know, Jody never really liked her. And Allison says, no, she was afraid of her. I'm glad she's gone, type thing, which is so there's so many layers just in that conversation, you know, like, oh, Jody was afraid of her because Jody would eventually have to leave the longer Catherine stayed, like therapy was working. So, of course, Jody's going to be afraid of Catherine because it means you have to admit that Jody's gone, that all that stuff. There's like so many layers in there. But then also, I thought the game was going to end there with these like two really broken people that had just murdered somebody and that was it. But then they take it a step further and Dr. Turner shows up and talks to Michael and just lets him go. Like that is a real therapy session right there that we're basically watching where they just listen and he goes, okay, oh, of course. And I found it so uncomfortable and also just like kind of beautiful to
Absolutely.
Have Dr. Turner there, you know, guide him through admitting the fact that he just killed Catherine.
Hello, Dr. Turner. It's very nice of you to come all the way out here to see us.
How are you feeling, Allison?
Oh, I'm fine. Michael's been helping me again. Now that Catherine's gone.
Yes, I'm sorry that didn't work out. You wouldn't consider someone else?
No. Absolutely not.
I really just wanted to have a word with you alone about what happened with Mrs. Randolph.
You know, she killed that dog she forced me to get. She poisoned it, tried to blame it on me. She's trying to turn Allison against me.
Incredible.
Well, not so incredible once you get to know her. She was a vicious, hateful, arrogant person.
That's terrible. I don't know what to say.
When she took that doll down from the attic, that was the end.
What doll?
It was Jody's doll. Miss Randolph dressed it in Jody's clothes. I made her take it with her.
The doll?
Yeah. She killed it.
I don't quite know what you mean.
She smashed its head in. For God's sakes, don't you even know what I'm talking about?
How did she leave? Did you drive her to the airport?
Put her in a cab.
And you told the taxi driver to take her to the airport?
No, I didn't tell him anything. I just put her in the car with her bags.
And the doll?
Yeah. Look, I don't even want to talk about her anymore. I don't want to think about her.
I understand how you feel.
No, you don't. You don't know what she tried to do. What she might have done if I hadn't stopped her.
What did she try to do?
She tried to kill Jody. She tried to blame it on me in front of Allison. It was my fault. Jody would cry whenever Allison would make her wear the seatbelt. What could I do? Allison would say, drive slower, Michael, drive slower. I did drive slow. Sometimes you're not thinking about it and you go a little faster.
Of course.
This is Randolph. She wanted me to suffer. She had a doll in her arms and it's upstairs. Maybe not on the stairs.
What did you do?
Couldn't let her go on with it. So I stopped her.
How?
I hit her. Had to. Afterward, when it was over, it was time to go, she understood. Put her bags in first.
Where did you put her bags?
Put the hammer in, too.
In the cab?
That's right. Out there, parked beside the dog grave.
And that mound of dirt out there, that's where you buried the dog.
And it wasn't in that weird, hokey TV, like, I'm going to get you to say something that you don't want to say type thing. It was just truly walking someone through what they just did, you know? And if she's still on your property, you would want her gone, wouldn't you? Yes. Okay, yes. Well, let's just go look at the property together. Mm. It has to be done. You know, like, just like that, all of that. Oh, my God. Ooh. Actually, I don't know if he said, wouldn't you? Because that would be a tie down, and that's like a sales tactic. And hopefully he didn't use that on Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had that? Like in sales, they teach you to tie people down. So they'll say, oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? So that the only answer you can say is yes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's what, for those of you listening, that's what I'm talking about. Wouldn't you as a tie down? So I would hope that he would not use that to walk a clearly broken man who just murdered a woman into admitting that. But anyway.
Yeah, I was always taught to like make the customer feel like they're making a choice without actually giving them a choice, which is kind of the same thing.
Isn't that terrible? Sales is so dirty. They teach you the worst stuff.
Is it bad that I never really felt dirty doing it? Am I a terrible person?
No.
I don't think I ever like sold somebody something that they didn't need, though. You know, I was very much like, this is as much as, you know, because I used to sell like cell phones and computers, basically.
Yeah.
And so it was always a conversation of like, what are you doing with this? this is what you need. This will get you by for a couple more years, you know, and that was sort of the end of the conversation and just sort of let them make a decision. I don't think I ever like outwardly like just made somebody spend money that they didn't need to or that wouldn't like actually benefit them in some way.
That's probably why you don't feel dirty about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever had that either, which is weird because the second sales job I had was insurance, which most people will be like, what? And it was pet insurance. So people are doubly like, what? You don't need pet insurance. But I'm telling you, for some animal, for dog, for sure. Cats, I don't know. But 100% for a dog, I would. And with those vet bills, are you kidding me? God, no. But to be fair, all I saw were the worst case scenarios because I worked in insurance. So all I saw were those horrible claims. I never really felt like I sold anybody anything that they didn't need. And the first sales job that I had was vacations. So that was great. Like, that was super easy, you know? You need a break, don't you? Yes.
You work hard.
So, yeah, you work hard, don't you? You don't think your wife deserves a break? She deserves a break, don't you say? Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, good Lord.
So, but in the context of this conversation that Dr. Turner has with Michael.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you... Is it a bad thing to use a tactic like that if Dr. Turner is sitting there and he knows that he's on the edge of having Michael admit to what happened and to admit to what he did and to sort of just poke him a little bit in that direction just to make sure that it happens?
I think you can poke somebody, but I don't think you should entrap someone. And I think using something like a tie down in an instance where you know this man is really broke, it's like those confession tapes. Have you seen or watched any documentaries on confessions and how, you know, people will just, they'll use crazy tactics to get people to confess to shit they've never done?
Not really, not a whole lot.
Oh, God. It can be pretty brutal. And, you know, one of the tactics is entrapping people into things by saying like, oh, clearly what he says, if she was still on the property, you would want her gone. Wouldn't you? And that's kind of like the only thing he can say to that is yes, because he didn't like her. You know, like he's thinking, of course I would want her gone, not I murdered Catherine. So had he been completely innocent, that's like very easily walking somebody into something that they didn't do. They'll plant ideas in their head and then just say like, oh, well, you see this sometimes on TV dramas, like, oh, well, you know, you just couldn't take it anymore and you broke and you killed her, you know, that kind of stuff. They'll say that and they'll, you know, plant these ideas. And after, you know, 11 hours of not being able to talk to anybody and being exhausted and them, you know, planting these ideas in your head, sometimes people actually start to believe it. They go, oh my God, what if I did blackout? What if I did this horrible thing? And then they start to think, oh my God, I'm a terrible person. And all of these things are going through their brain. And then they just eventually end up admitting to it because they think they believe them. They think they did something wrong and that they need help. And then all of a sudden it's like, as soon as they say that, okay, boom, you're booked, you committed murder and trial and we're not going to help you. And that's crazy to me. So in that regard, I get a little uncomfortable with him using that when he is now going to basically, I mean, we're lucky. We saw that he killed Catherine and 100% he should be tried for that. But those tactics aren't, you know, we shouldn't just look at that and go, oh, because the end justifies the means, like because we know that he killed her, it's okay. You shouldn't use it if it's not okay to do to somebody who we don't know if they killed him or not, then it's not okay to do to somebody that we know did, I guess.
Right.
Because then where's the line? But I don't think that he crossed the line as far as I can remember. I don't think he used too many tie downs. Like he said, what I really enjoyed was when he would say, oh, well, you know, you don't know because you weren't there. Michael gets really upset and says, you know, you don't know what it's been like. And he says, like, you're right, I don't. And then listens. He just listens to Michael go on. And then Michael says something like, you know, I just, you know, she was crazy. She killed my dog. And I don't know. He says something. And twice Dr. Turner goes, of course, just in a very like, well, absolutely. Even though, you know, any sane person would be like, no, that's not what you do. But he just was like, oh, that's understandable. He used some tactics that I feel like are legit in therapy. Mm-hmm. Not very eloquent today, but yes, I do feel like his tactics were things that you would see an actual therapist use to get you to walk yourself through either what has just happened or a traumatic event or the fact that you killed somebody.
Mm-hmm. I found it really fascinating to sort of have this experience of it's very strongly implied that Michael basically ends up with the same sort of delusion that Allison has, which is really a really sort of interesting breaking point. But then I'm not really sure if that's actually what happened, because, you know, he does sort of like willingly go with, you know, at the very end of the game, Dr. Turner is called the police, of course, and, you know, they take Catherine's body away and they arrest Michael. And Michael is just very much like,
he says to Allison, I'm going with the police.
Well, it's all over now.
It's good.
Would you like anything to eat or drink?
No, thank you. Actually, we've all got to get going. Both you and Michael. He has to see some people, and we don't want to leave you here alone.
Oh, I can wait for him. I've waited for him before. I'm not afraid of being alone.
You may have to wait quite a long time before he comes back.
How long?
More than a few hours.
Mm-hmm. Or it will be a very long time or something like that. One of them says, yep. I think Turner says he's going with the police. It'll be a long time. And then he's like, it's going to be longer than a couple of hours. Like, he knows what he's done. He knows what the consequences are, and he knows where he's about to go and what's going to happen. So that's what makes me think that he is not quite, like, he doesn't think Jody's alive for sure. So when he says that on the couch, I feel like it's gross. It's very much like he just wants to protect Allison, and like, she's gone now and don't be upset about it.
So taking that and sort of backtracking what I just said here a little bit, with the conversation that Michael and Dr. Turner have at the end of the game, you know, he doesn't openly admit to anything, and it's sort of in his inflection. It's in the way that he says things, and it's his demeanor, right? He's very cold and very stoic, and just sort of how you would expect somebody who is just so overwhelmed to speak. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, I put her in a cab. Just like that. And like, that's as much emotion as you get out of him. And just has this very cold look on his face, you know, when it's just
like, he's like, you put her in a cab. And then that's another technique that they do. He asks again, and I'm sorry, where did you put her, or where did she go? And he says, oh, you did this, or you put her somewhere. And he goes, no, I just put her in the cab.
I put
with
her in
stuff.
Her cap. And where did you put her bags? You know, and stuff like
and
that.
And then he asks again, and he's like, oh yeah, but he does it so casually that it, you know, it would normally trip a liar up. And Michael doesn't. He's just like, no, I put her in. And then when he almost catches him, he's like, no, I just put her in the cab. But the cab's right there where the dog is buried. And you're just like, what?
And that's it, right? Like, is that?
Yeah, that's not the lawn, mm-hmm. or that's not the front yard or the driveway. That's the backyard with the dead dog. Like, oh, so
in that moment, like, you know, that's something that a broken person would say about it, right? Like, oh, the cab's right there, and just pointing to this mound of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's very strange to me to sort of try to decide whether Michael actually had like a full-on breakdown, or whether he was like trying to lie about it because he felt like that's what he had to do, but he obviously didn't want to.
Yeah,
if that makes sense, you know, like, he sort of just wanted it to be over at that point.
If you think about the breakdown, I'm not saying they're mutually exclusive, but if he had a breakdown, I'm less likely to believe it was premeditated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like he did that thing, and then immediately he just like spiraled. He's talking to the dead dog. He's like dragging her body across the yard. He buries her and then goes in and just is kind of like, I have to make sure that Allison doesn't freak out about this. And then when Dr. Turner comes, he knows it's over, or he just falls for the, you know, therapy that, you know, Turner has given him. So I find that very interesting. Also, can we just talk about how fucked up that is for Turner to go away because his brother died. And then, like, to have to fly back because basically your secretary's like, I think this guy's going to do something horrible to your employee. And then to find out that, oh, yeah, he killed my employee, buried her in the backyard. Mm-hmm. God! Can't catch a break.
It does a lot to sort of help you consider yourself, you know, in a way that you don't really expect.
And there's a lot of questions that we didn't even talk about. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the psychoanalysis questions that they ask throughout the game. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, but you've covered everything pretty much, there's actually a lot more that we haven't even talked about or touched on that I still think it makes the game worth playing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, anyway, so thanks for chatting with me about
Yeah,
this.
No problem. I was going to say we're at about an hour and 40 minutes.
But,
so
yeah, but hey, it's going to be
this
great.
This was dope. This was fun.
Yeah, it was really, really good. For sure. I think this is the first episode that we've ever done just the two of us.
Is it? Which,
yeah, I think it is.
Oh, wow.
I liked it. It was fun. Yeah, it was really good. All right. For sure. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Thank you, Captain, for being here. Is this where we like shout ourselves out now?
Well,
that's weird.
I suppose. I mean, we could.
No,
I don't know.
Just okay. Here, I'll do it.
If,
you can find us at deepdivecast.com and at Twitter at deepdivecast and at Instagram at deepdivecast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
The Deep Dive Cast is brought to you by PBTV, and you can find us at deepdivecast.com as well as on Twitter and Instagram at deepdivecast. And if you like what you hear, consider rating and reviewing The Deep Dive on iTunes. And if you'd like to, you can also support the show by visiting us on Patreon at Pumpkinberry. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpapers, early access to episodes, bonus episode content, and of course the knowledge that you directly are keeping The Deep Dive afloat. We'd also like to invite you to join us every Monday morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we air the episodes live and have a deep dive session with the listeners right there in chat. Come join in on the conversation at twitch.tv/pumpkinberry. See you next time, divers. The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.